If you're not taking care of people's animals, you could very well have people that are endangering their own lives because they're not going to leave them behind. Welcome back to Table Talk. This is Senator Steve Glaser, where we tell surprising stories about people, places, and politics. I'm joined by Vivian Vosu Skinner, my sidekick, Vivian. This is kind of your favorite topic. It's about animals. So we're now telling surprising stories about animals, right? You love that.
Yeah, this was a really interesting episode.
And let me tell you where this all came from. I was in New York on a trip, and I heard about a piece of legislation in New York where they wanted to ensure that if you were evacuating in the case of an emergency, that public transit up to that point, you couldn't take an animal on public transit. And so the law was to change it so that you could. And I thought, well, that makes a lot of sense. I've tried to do legislation that supports our animal community in my time in the Senate. And I came back and introduced that bill in California and passed that bill so that you could bring your animal in an emergency on transit. And in the course of that, I did learn about a much broader and bigger problem in California, and that is from these natural disasters, whether it's fires or floods or earthquakes, that we really didn't have an emergency response team that focused on animals. And when those big events were happening in California, we would import talent from other states, principally Texas, that had that kind of emergency response for animals. So I worked with my staff, principally Dan Weintraub, my chief of staff, on legislation to create a brand new program in California, an emergency response for animals. And we were able to get that legislation passed and funded, and a program was created at the University of California, Davis. So we're going to get in our cars here at the Capitol and head off to UC Davis, about a 25-minute drive away, to talk with the experts on the campus.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to go visit the One Health Institute at UC Davis, which is kind of like the parent of the California Veterinary Emergency Team, CVET, which is the one who does all this great work.
So the program was created through legislation a few years ago and funded, and now we're going to get the report on what they're doing, how they're spending the money, and what preparations they've put together to help our people and our animals. Well, it's nice to be here at UC Davis and the veterinary school to catch up on the work that you're doing. Why don't you both introduce yourselves so we know who we're talking to?
My name is Jay Kerr. I'm a graduate of UC Davis, small animal veterinarian. I also co-chair the disaster response group for CVMA, the California Veterinary Medical Association.
And I'm Michael Zuccardi. I'm faculty here at the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, the executive director of the One Health Institute, and director of the California Veterinary Emergency Team.
So, Mike, we're excited about this new program that you're leading. Why don't you tell me what's been the startup? How did we deal with disasters affecting animals 5 years ago, and now how are we doing it today based on your work that you're doing here?
Sure. Well, I think there's been a great need for kind of centralizing veterinary response to disasters. And as disasters get larger, those needs are greater. The California Veterinary Medical Association has done a great job in coordinating efforts, but the needs are becoming greater for a standardized way that we can approach things throughout the state. So with your support and with legislative funding, the California Veterinary Emergency Team was founded here and brought to the School of Veterinary Medicine to be able to help standardize an approach throughout the state so we can have the equipment, the supplies, the resources, and the personnel trained ahead of these disasters so that when those large-scale disasters hit, we can hit the ground running to provide the best care possible to animals.
Vivian, jumping in here, the California Veterinary Emergency Team, that's CVET for short, is a program that's nested under a cluster of programs at the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine called the UC Davis One Health Institute. That institute trains a variety of government agencies on how to respond to animals' needs in disaster situations. That's wildlife, household pets, and larger animals like livestock. Those government agencies include the California Department of Food and Agriculture, the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and even the group within the California Department of Fish and Game that treats animals injured in oil spills. We'll talk more about those organizations later.
So as I said, 5 years ago, there was no emergency response team. So it's my understanding that when disasters struck here in California, we'd go to Texas and they would send their experts out here to help us. Is that what it was, the landscape before you guys were formed?
I think those were resources that were available to bring people in through the state. Jay was there at the time, probably has insight into that.
Well, since 2015, I've deployed 7 times to various wildfires around the state and 5 different counties. And I'm with the CVMA.
That's the California Veterinary Medical Association.
So we have supplies that are already set up and ready to go. We have volunteers, a network that we can call on to volunteers. But ultimately, we would respond to a fire, and let's take the campfire, for example. I would show up with a trunk full of supplies and start organizing volunteers. That's how that event started, and it just that one became so huge that it was just went way beyond our capabilities, and I think ultimately it's aware that we need somebody overseeing this.
So up until this program and its precursor was started, disaster-related animal care was largely impromptu, with people like Jay responding to each disaster as it happened as quickly as they could. But it was clear that there needed to be a more cohesive and strategic plan of response for when these disasters inevitably happened.
So the work here at Davis creates coordination, planning, and implementation during disasters to going out to the scene and helping animals, big and small. Is that right?
That's correct. And we largely, one of the templates we've used for that is our success in managing the Oiled Wildlife Care Network here at the school for the past 30 years now on behalf of the state, where we actually coordinate now with 45 organizations and have more than 1,600 people actually trained and ready to go. And that's the mindset that we're hoping to bring to the CVET program, eventually evolving to that level of preparedness and working with partners such as the CVMA, Red Cross, Cal Animals, other organizations and NGOs in that space to bring everybody together.
And that's when an oil spill occurs, the wildlife affected, that's where you've been doing that for 30 plus years, going out and helping in those situations and now applying that to broader disasters, fires, floods, and the rest.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've treated more than 10,000 animals in those 30 years in the state, and actually our worldwide model for disaster preparedness.
So you've ramped up here at Davis. So what does that mean in terms of the capacity that you now have when a disaster strikes? What does that mean for people and for equipment, supplies to help animals? What's happening here?
I think what we're doing is we're trying to add advanced veterinary capacity, what we can, to different regional areas, the community animal response teams, the other systems that are in place. We're not responsible for running shelters, but what we're doing is making sure that those organizations that do have the veterinary support to be able to do that, which is why us bringing the equipment, the supplies, the organizational structure, and having organizations like CVMA bringing their veterinarians and veterinary professionals in, we can work together to make sure those animals are receiving the best care possible.
So on the way over here, you gave me a tour of one of the new trailers that you've equipped to literally care for, operate on injured animals. What's that capacity that you have now built here?
We currently, over the past 2 years, have gotten 5, either constructed or purchased 5 purpose-built trailers to be able to care for those animals. Over time, we're going to be continuing to build those capabilities. We have both trailers that can care for those animals, but what we're doing is through our county outreach is determining what capabilities are in those counties and actually creating plans for each. So if there's a issue in Del Norte County, we'll know exactly what infrastructure they have and what we would need to bring to add the veterinary capabilities to it. So really, each of the 58 counties, there are different capabilities within them. And what we want to do is to spend the time to develop plans that are purpose-built for each area, depending on what the disaster is.
That trailer was about the size of the cargo area of a small moving truck, but had the space inside for almost a dozen animals in their own holding crate, two exam tables, cabinets stocked with necessary equipment and supplies, and much more. You can see some behind the scenes of this tour on our social media, at Steve Glazer on both Twitter and Instagram.
And if I may just add to that,
Dr. Kerr.
The other aspect that Mike has alluded to, but he's alluded to the non-government organizations, but there were also several state agencies that were involved in animal response, CDFA, for example, Cal OES.
And that is the California Department of Food and Agriculture and the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, which we talked a little bit about earlier.
They are charged with taking care of animals. Let's just basically. So it was under their umbrella that they would take care of animals that were involved in disasters. But they tend to focus on animal diseases and other aspects of what's going on with animals in the state. So, yes, they're charged with it, but they weren't funded, nor were they. It wasn't part of their. So when again, for example, the campfire happened, yes, they got involved, but it was not handled very well at all. And Cal OES is Office of Emergency Services. Again, animals should be included in whatever plans they've developed, but frankly, they're dealing with people and a lot of other issues, and the animals can have fell by the wayside. And so what's happened now is that all those groups have been brought to the table by essentially CVET, and they have regular Zoom meetings, and they all know each other, and they have a plan. We're so far ahead of where we were 5 years ago.
And I think you hit upon the problem that my former chief of staff, Dan Weintraub, is here, and that he certainly became aware of, that a lot of planning for people, but not for animals. And and one of the things that Dan was astute enough to note on many occasions, that if you're not taking care of people's animals, you could very well have people that are endangering their own lives because they're not going to leave them behind.
Well said. They will also endanger first responders because they won't leave unless their animals are accounted for. And now they stay behind, and now first responders are put in danger trying to rescue them because they should have left in the first place.
Right, and Dan's here around the table, so it's an opportunity for me to say thank you to him for his leadership.
And Dan and I have been through the issues, the challenges with CDFA and getting them to come to the table and understand what the roles of each one are going to be, and I know Mike could speak to that.
Because there's turf. There's politics everywhere, even in our disaster response world.
Yes.
And it made the legislation that we advanced challenging, but you all were able to overcome those hurdles. It's exciting to see. And I think that the part that still leaves me a little bit, not confused, but worried, is that these disasters are becoming more common, mm-hmm. and they're becoming much bigger. They're not little fires anymore.
Correct.
They're big fires. And I worry about the capacity, because we're not talking about a dozen animals. We're talking about hundreds of animals. And what do you say about what is our capacity to help now? I know it's grown through your leadership and through this program here at Davis. But what would you say in terms of our capacity to deal with the big disasters that are going to come next year or the next year after that?
Well, as you mentioned, I think the capacity is growing. I think we're continuing to evolve better plans and increase capabilities as far as equipment everywhere. But it's always needed. It's one of the importance of having programs like CVET that continue to invest in preparedness, in planning ahead of the disasters. Because if we can incrementally increase capacity in all these different areas, we can continue to invest in that, and increasing as disasters become, as you mentioned, more frequent and more severe, we can continue to advance that capability. Every county is different. Every region is different, and there are different risks in those. Some are floods, some are wildfires, some are more rural, some are more urban, which is why we're taking a very targeted approach to try to build those capabilities and also work with partners. So it's not only the veterinary capabilities that are there, but if we can assist the community animal response teams, the shelter medicine groups, and the people that can assist in the sheltering that is going to also improve capabilities and capacities for these incidents.
Yes. These larger events also require longer term commitments, which our group is, we have a large group, but it's all volunteer. And so we're usually good for
the veterinary community.
The veterinary community, yes. Right. And we're usually organize things for a few weeks, but again, the campfire turned into a couple of months, and bigger earthquakes, for example, could conceivably go on for much longer than that. And that's where having a group that's funded and whose role is going to be to stay there until the problems, you know, the event is handled.
Right. Well, so maybe as I wrap up here, you know, this is a question I ask first responders who are very focused on planning. What keeps you up at night, Mike? You think about the future and the work that you're doing to plan for disasters. What do you worry about the most?
Well, I think what I worry about the most is we put a huge amount of effort into what we call blue sky time. So when there is no emergency and there is no disaster, planning as much as we can. But what keeps me up is, are we planning for the right things and are we ready enough? And it's that fear that continues to drive us, even during those blue sky times, to continue to push, continue to prepare, to plan, to train individuals, even if we're in a period of time where, such as in the past several years, we haven't had the large-scale incidents like we've had previously, making sure that the potential for disasters doesn't cause people to become complacent and to become lax, to continue to push to make sure we're as ready as possible.
And in this space of animal safety, animal care, if you had a magic wand to make things better in any particular way, what would you wave it over?
Oh, that's an amazing question. You know, I think it's continuing to advance what we're currently doing, continue to have the partners that we have, and to increase those partnerships, and to better organize not only the veterinary elements that CVMA and UC Davis are focusing in on, but allowing us to expand all the different elements within animal disaster response, the sheltering, the post-emergency phase when communities are going through recovery, actually having the ability to assist those communities and those individuals to recover back to before the disaster, having that more holistic approach to this, that is where I hope we can get to.
Well, you know, animals don't have a voice in our traditional English language, but I know we feel like we can understand them a lot of times just in their behavior. But you bring voice to their care and safety, both of you, and we appreciate your leadership in the space and all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I think for many of us, they are family members.
Absolutely.
Indeed. Four-legged family members.
Yes. All
right. Next up, we'll hear from Dan Weintraub, who was the Senator's former chief of staff and who joined us on this tour.
Dan, well, you were my chief of staff during this whole adventure of trying to build this program up here at Davis. What do you think of after our tour and seeing and hearing about all that they're doing?
Well, I think it's every legislator's dream and every legislative staffer's dream to see a problem and identify a solution and then actually be able to get that implemented. And then it's a special treat to come and see it on the ground operating and to hear about how it's going to change. It is changing people's lives and ultimately, in this case, animals' lives.
And I remember during the legislative process, you put in my testimony quite often the fact that when we had these big disasters that we didn't have the leadership expertise here in the state and we had to bring it in many cases from good folks from Texas. And so it must be a lot of pride to know that not only that the work has been done here at such a high level so quickly, but that expertise can help all around this state and around the country.
Yeah, well, like the oil spill program is now being called to share their expertise around the world, I would expect that within a few years, this veterinary response team is going to be a model for the country and probably for places around the world, because UC Davis has the expertise in the veterinary school that is really second to none, and now to be able to put it into practice for emergencies and caring for animals in disasters just makes it even more valuable.
And, you know, one of my takeaways from the tour today was that sure that they're bringing in the trailers, the mobile operating rooms, they're bringing in a lot of equipment that's important and meaningful, but they've taken the time to go and they know at the beginning of a disaster, it's what's happening in that place, that city, that county, and they're trying to bring expertise to upgrade the capacity so that when they do come in a day or two later after a disaster, that they have it. They've built a foundation within that community that they can add on to, enhance, because they've been able to build that capacity up. I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, there are thousands of volunteers around the state that are eager to help in disasters. They're veterinarians, of course, but also people who run shelters, people who do evacuations. And what this team can do is help train them in a standard way and help coordinate them with the resources they need to do their jobs and then be on site to help manage all that volunteer power so that it doesn't go to waste, because people can't volunteer forever. So they're giving of their lives and leaving their jobs to help out. And what this team can do is, you know, maximize that volunteer power so it helps as much as possible.
So, Dan, you've been around the block a long time with me today. You know, talk about the origins of our animal, our love of animals, and the work we've done in that space.
Sure. Well, this all got started when you were on a trip to New York and you saw in the news that New York State was going to require transit districts to allow people to bring pets on buses during disaster evacuations. And you came back and asked your staff to look into that and see what the practice was in California. And we found out that California was not doing that, even though it was actually a federal mandate and our disaster funds were at risk because we weren't doing it. So we ran that bill, which was successful. And while we were working on that bill, Dr. Kerr from our district reached out to us and said, "Hey, this is a great idea, but it's only a tiny piece of the problem with animals and disasters." And until that time, we had no idea that the state response had been much criticized, and it was documented that the disaster response was kind of a disaster. And so we started working with Dr. Kerr and the stakeholders to work on the bill that eventually became the creation of this program and the budget provided for it. In the meantime, of course, you remember that we worked on the mouth-to-snout bill, which was another one of your pet bills, which the mouth-to-snout bill was about the liability that first responders faced if they tried to give resuscitation to an animal and something went wrong. So they were actually being sued when they came in to, say, a house fire and tried to revive an animal who was in danger. And if something went wrong, they could be liable. And so we carried a bill to immunize them for that liability, and that was known as the mouth-to-snout bill.
So my final word on this podcast is that in addition to informing people about some great work happening here at UC Davis to help all of us in disasters for our animals, is that I hope that people who do have animals, when they talk about a plan for a disaster, that it incorporates your animals too. Think about that now, whether that's pet food or pet medicine or cages that you could transport them in, or how a neighbor can help, or where you can help a neighbor's pet, that they're thinking about all those things now. Because that's the preparation that really can make a difference. It's what the folks here at Davis, he talks about blue sky planning, meaning it's a good, nice day and you're not in the middle of a disaster, but that's the time really to think ahead. And so I hope this conversation today and learning about this exciting program at Davis helps all of us do the best preparation for our wonderful four-legged friends.
Great.
Well, Vivian, it was fun to be on the ground and see the actual work that was taking place at Davis. I particularly liked seeing the trailers that are ready to roll out in an emergency and the capacity they have for dozens of cages for cats and dogs, the surgical room, where they could do some serious health care for animals that had been disabled. Mm-hmm. So, we saw some of the places for some of the smaller animals. My takeaway was the important work they were doing on coordination, that in every city, every county, there are folks that are preparing for emergencies, and that these guys are out there saying, okay, what are you doing for the animals, and how can we work with you and bring expertise, and how can we supplement if we have to come into your community? What's the place that we should occupy so we're all working together?
Yeah, it really does seem like a very well-coordinated network where if there's an emergency, say, like 700 miles away, they can quickly coordinate with people in that area and tell them exactly what they need to do. So it seemed like a very well-thought-out process.
And it's good that there's this dedication to animals. I mean, it's not the biggest part of our emergency response, obviously. We've got all kinds of emergency first responders on fires and floods, but a lot of that is all focused on people first, safety, property second, and animals has been kind of a something that's way in the background. And these guys are bringing it right up there and saying, guys, we have to take care of everything. And to take care of the whole person, in some cases, you have to take care of their animals because they're not leaving.
Yeah.
If you can't get your horse out, there are a lot of people who aren't leaving their property, and they're putting everything at risk.
Yeah.
Well, I love telling animal stories. So I hope that folks enjoyed this inside look of the preparations that are going on, in particular for animals. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. And what do we say, Vivian, if you liked it?
Make sure you subscribe, share, and if you really enjoyed it, post it to your social media and share with friends.
We enjoyed sharing these stories together. And if you have ideas yourself of the things that you think in your world that would be interesting to talk about, please let me know. So that concludes our podcast, and I look forward to sharing more stories with you in the coming weeks.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk. As always, you can find all our episodes wherever you listen to podcasts and on Steve's website at sd07.senate.ca.gov.